Welcome everyone to a Baseball America podcast powered by Louisville Slugger. Visit them online on Twitter or Instagram at Slugger Nation. This is the Baseball America College Podcast with Jim Schoeder and Mike Lanana. I'm John Manuel. And Jim just flew in from D.C. His arms are tired. And I don't know if I'm inspired by Mike for the bad joke or what. But there wasn't punny enough, Mike, to be a Mike Lanana joke. And it wasn't funny enough either, I think.
Well,
letting it pass without comment. Smart move. Smart move, Mike, to a rough start of the podcast. We're just going to dive right in. We do have a new number one team this week. It's Louisiana State. So if you go to our baseballamerica.com homepage and check out the top 25, you'll see there was some movement at the top of the rankings, some movement later on. We're going to talk some more SEC later. We do want to start off, though, with Jim's road trip up to the D.C. area. Maryland moves up to from number 24 to number 21. With a series win this weekend against Cal State Fullerton, Jim, save the middle game of that series. Not a lot of run scoring in
there.
In that series. So let's start off with the Terps. What they did well, besides Mike Schwarin, I wanted to pronounce his name.
There you go.
He told me how to pronounce his name, Schwarin. I didn't listen very well, but he did teach me how to pronounce his name.
That's a tricky one.
It is a tricky one, and he's tricky, and he does not get rocked around. He's pretty devastating, Jim, and to me, he's the separator. Maryland's scrappy. They've got a good bullpen. They could manufacture some runs. They're somewhat athletic. Mm-hmm. But to me, Schwarin's really the separator for that team. He makes them from a decent team and a borderline regional team to a potential regional host. And as you saw firsthand, if the Terps are to win their way into hosting, they just need to do that off campus in Aberdeen, not on campus.
Yeah, no, it's not the... Not much to write home. Not much to be excited about the facility there. It's pretty, you know, their multi-million, billion-dollar, whatever, football stadium looms over it. And as you're kind of just tucked into there, this open-air slabs of concrete, press box, and what have you. So it's kind of tells you where the landscape is there.
Baseball is in the pecking order.
Yes, exactly.
And the thing is, it was a well below average facility in the ACC, and now it's below average in the Big Ten.
It is.
I mean, I think Rutgers and Maryland, the two newest teams in the Big Ten, are at the bottom of that league, if not at the bottom, very near the bottom, for a worse ballpark, which is surprising because they both came from supposedly bigger time, at least Maryland, a bigger time conference in the ACC. Now, Maryland was our preseason pick in the Big Ten. What did they show you this weekend? Did they validate that? Did they? I mean, obviously, Illinois has something to say about
exactly.
that. But how did that first-hand look of Maryland? Did they confirm some of your suspicions?
They didn't tear it up offensively. And Fullerton can pitch, which we'll do more on the Titans. And the Terps were kind of shorthanded offensively. I think Nick Sieri, one of their big power guys, was out. Lamont McWade, who's one of their regular guys, I think he's had a strong start there. He was out. They had a couple other guys that are kind of been nicked up. But, so right now their lineup is kind of top-heavy with Brandon Lau and Jose Quas and Kevin Martyr at the top. But, they can manufacture runs. They are very athletic. And they lose in very difficult circumstances. They lose Taylor Stiles on Saturdays. And he had kind of really seized that Saturday role. We're talking about trying to get the rest of their pitching in order after Mike Schwarin and... But then they got a great outing out of Robert Galligan, who's kind of a three-pitch lefty, and then Jake Drosner on Sunday, who pitched really well, and he was a guy who had been in their weekend rotation. He was in the rotation last year when they had their big breakout year. He started the clinching game in that regional in South Carolina last year, and he had basically didn't throw any strikes this first half of this year, so he lost his job. But now he pitched really well, even though they lost yesterday, but he pitched really well, eight shutout innings. That's really, to see both of those guys get opportunities to pitch in the weekend rotation and really run with it, even against not a great offensive team in the Titans. But, that's really what you want to see, those two dudes both responding that way. And, just in that series in general, defense was the real separator between those two teams. They could both pitch. Neither of them were particularly offensive, especially the Titans, but... Fullerton made eight errors in that series. They had some guys. They had a few guys out themselves, but made eight errors. The Terps only made one. The Terps' infield defense, which I kind of harped on Twitter multiple times, but their defense was just aces. And even though they have two freshmen out there, and Morris and the shortstop Kevin Smith, Zach Morris, the first baseman, but
great name.
But
Hard to beat Zach Morris. It probably was not easy to grow up named Zach Morris.
Exactly. But,
in a post Saved by the Bell era.
But, yeah, they were both, you know, they played just lockdown defense. And, I mean, Kevin Martyr was really good behind the plate. John Sheff, their catcher, had that's very high praise for his work back there. And he's kind of really come on offensively. But for the Terps, they're still a pitching and defense team at heart, like they were last year. They kind of found some more offense this year. But
they banged the ball a little bit more than I thought. They've got 34 homers.
They have,
And the whole, I mean, but we did think this was going to be a big 10 year,
mm-hmm.
and it's shaped up that way so far. And, you know, Maryland's had a good year, guys, and they're fourth in the league. You know, Mike, we were meeting on the top 25. You advocated, hey, you know, I actually moved Illinois up.
Mm-hmm.
I had Illinois in my top 10. And I don't think initially we had the Illini there, or the Illini, or however many wins it is in a row now. I've lost track. I can't count all these W's.
Yeah.
But this team just keeps doing it, and I don't feel we've talked a ton about Illinois on the podcast, but they're 32-6. I don't care who you play. That's a ridiculous record, and they've played good teams. So now 13 in a row. We've talked a little bit about Iowa. We had Hudson go see Iowa last weekend at Maryland. Now I've got Illinois in this in the top 10 at number 9. We've talked a little bit about the conference, but what specifically, it seems like Illinois pitches as well as any team in the country, and especially in this hot streak they're on right now.
Yeah, well, that Twitter account with all the W's is definitely a little unwieldy at this point.
It has gotten that way. That's a good problem for them to have.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. But yeah, no, I think it starts with the pitching. I think you look at Kevin Duchesne, and this weekend, a really gutsy performance for him. He actually went to his grandmother's funeral the morning before he started, and then he came out and threw 7 innings, 1-run ball, 9 strikeouts, and got the win. And he's been phenomenal for him this year, a junior. He led the Big Ten in ERA last year, and this year it's 0.82 right now. So just behind his teammate Tyler Jay in the bullpen.
Who cares about the new balls with these guys, right?
Yeah, no, he's been phenomenal for them. And it really does start with the pitching, I think, with them. They've had a very consistent group all year. They have a senior in Drayson Johnson who's been great for them as well, time in and time again. So, you know, they're for real. They're a formidable team. I think any team that wins 13 games in a row is a team that you should take seriously. And, you know, 10-1 in the Big Ten, which is stronger this year, is a stronger conference, so that's nothing to sneeze at either. I mean, they're a quality group.
Just a couple of stats here on the Illini pitchers. They're 7th in the country in ERA, but I guess what stands out more to me is Drew Dickinson, their pitching coach, is old enough that I covered him when he was playing for the Illini. I remember him there. I remember him as a brash Oakland A's farmhand. He's still brash on Twitter. And he was a mid-80s guy. When I talked to him earlier this year, you know, he was talking about how Tyler Jay's changeup is as hard as his fastball was when he pitched. They're both left-handers. But what he has done, he hasn't slowed everybody down to his velocity level, but the Illini have kind of taken on part of his mantra. When he pitched, he was all about command. He didn't walk anybody. And this team is 4th in the country in strikeout-to-walk ratio as a team. Right. Basically 4 strikeouts for every walk they issue on the mound. So it's just, you know, it's a very control-oriented rotation, but also has some real power guys and 2 top-shelf left-handers like Duchesne and Jay.
Right.
It's just going to be a tough matchup for anybody, guys. And mm-hmm. the rest of the Big Ten, that I guess, has kind of stood out to me. A big weekend for Ohio State this weekend. They've mm-hmm. stayed consistent, and I know that they haven't played the best schedule necessarily in the league.
It gets tough. I mean, now this was a big hurdle for them to get over.
It was, and
now all I could throw at a team that's kind of sneaking up there is Michigan State. I mean, they're up to 41 in the RPI. They're up to 7-5 in the conference. They haven't, you know, they haven't won. You know, they lost a series to Illinois. They lost a series to Ohio State. So they
did. Well, they swept Oregon, right?
That's their claim to fame right now. Is they swept Oregon on the road, which Oregon's kind of been struggling. It's still a talented team nonetheless. And I mean, they're. You know, and their schedule—they're up to 7-5 in the league, and the remaining schedule is pretty manageable. So as long as they win those series and don't, you know, if they were to like lose a series to Purdue or something, that would pretty much kill their RPI. But
right.
So as long as you take care of business, though, I mean, they could sneak into a regional. I mean, they're up to 41 in the RPI, 7-5 in the conference. They've got 11 top 100 wins. You keep adding to those a bit. I mean, it's not inconceivable they could kind of be that. You know, maybe that the fifth team, maybe Indiana's kind of fallen off a little bit, so maybe they could sneak, kind of go in the back door there.
Indiana seems like it's fallen off. Nebraska, that's a tough
weekend
for the Huskers.
They're kind of treading on dangerous water here.
It feels that way. Losing that series to Ohio State.
At home. You would expect them to win a series at home.
Definitely seems like it gives Ohio State a pretty nice data point on that resume for the committee come Field of 64 time, Jim. We're about a month away from that now. Really 5 weeks away. Four more regular season weeks and then conference tournaments. But Ohio State's in there 9-3 in the league. They can really pitch. Lankins was outstanding for them this weekend in the clincher. Draft-eligible sophomore that does not hurt his draft status for him this weekend. You know, they're a game back of Iowa for second place. They've got this gaudy RPI. They go on the road and win. I feel like Illinois, Iowa, Maryland are in very, very good shape for at-large bids.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Ohio State...
They took a big step this weekend.
Right. And I feel like Ohio State and Nebraska are in good shape, maybe not great shape.
Nebraska's RPI is still up there.
But it's still very good. But
they're down to 6-6 now. They kind of... I need to pick it up a little bit.
That's what I'm wondering. I think we've talked about how strong the Big Ten is this year, and it's been borne out. But when you have four teams that have RPIs in the bottom 150, like Northwestern, Rutgers, Penn State, Purdue, how much will that potentially counteract? I mean, you've been studying and crunching some of the numbers. I mean, this is uncharted water for the Big Ten anyway.
It is.
But getting four would be kind of revolutionary. We're talking about a fifth bid. Does that soft bottom hurt the chances of the league getting a fifth team in there?
It would, and I do think for Nebraska, I mean, they do have a couple of tough series left, and I think they still have to play, the schedule's not going to load for me, but I know they have a bad
Wi-Fi day in the baseball area. Sure.
I remember looking at it last night, they have four series left, two of them are against two of the other good teams, so you kind of figure they need to, and then they have two of the bottom teams, so if you figure they go 3-3 against the two good teams, 5-1 against the others. That would get them to, I believe, 14 wins.
You're really talking about...
As much as the Big Ten is better, you still can't finish with a 500 or below record in the league. You need to... I mean, even in the SEC, that's risky. So in the Big Ten, you still need to get up there, you know, get over 500 and still have a pretty decent record to for your efforts there.
Three of the Huskers' final four series are on the road, and this weekend we have a big rivalry series, Nebraska and Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
When you've been to Omaha, you notice those two schools. That's the new rivalry for Nebraska. You know, all those years, it was Keith Jackson, Nebraska and Oklahoma in football. Let me tell you about Oklahoma. Exactly. Jim, I hope that someone else will do the imitation.
I've heard it.
You've heard me do it enough over the years, or you've heard Keith Jackson. But Nebraska and Iowa are now this rivalry, and that's a big series. And I feel like Nebraska, if they lose that series, they're in trouble. They've still got to go to Iowa, and they've still got to go to Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not series they're going to be favored in. And they still have to go to Northwestern and then home to Purdue.
What you have to sweep?
I feel like they have to sweep those two tough, less bottom feeding teams, and they got to win one of those series on the road against Iowa or Illinois. And those are tough calls. I feel like the Huskers are in a skosh of trouble here.
Yeah, that's the right way to put it. Skosh is the right way to put it. You really say they're in trouble, but they're trending that way.
It's not a positive trend for me, Mike. And that's the one I didn't like. We're talking Big Ten. Let's flip the switch a little bit and go Big West.
Yeah.
The Titans. I remember the Titans back when they were good.
Remember the Titans.
I do.
They did like their cover. That was probably the highlight of the weekend.
And that's the crazy thing is that they've been very consistent this year, just like last year. They don't hit. They just don't hit, and they don't execute on offense, and it seems like they don't execute defensively either.
Yeah, I think... they did, talking to Rick Vanderhook yesterday, even though they won that game, but he wasn't happy with their intensity or their...
Well, he's not a happy guy.
Yeah, he's not a happy guy.
There's no happy or go funky with that guy.
Yeah, he didn't like their energy, didn't like their focus, they just over the course of that series, they did pretty much everything that a team can do to get its coach ticked off, other than pitchers didn't walk people. But other than that, I mean, they couldn't get runners in from third with less than two outs. They made mistakes on the bases. Like I said, they made eight errors in the series. They had a critical situation. They couldn't get a bunt down. I mean, it's about all the little things that the Titans need to do, they did not do. I mean, they pitched. Thomas Eshelman was great on Friday. Garza was okay, but he didn't didn't get much help. I think his defense gave up 300 runs out of the six he allowed. And I mean, probably the most encouraging thing was John Gavin was really good yesterday.
Big freshman lefty, big freshman. San Jose. Mm-hmm. You know, definitely one of their bigger recruits last year.
Yeah.
And he's been very good for them this year.
Yeah, I've heard some people kind of wondered about him, but he's been good. I mean, he was good. Yesterday was his best start, by a mile, really. And so, I mean, they're still. I mean, it's still. I think there's still a lot on the table for them. They're still in the middle of the Big West race. They still have all the other, you know, Irvine and Long Beach and Santa Barbara all have to come to Fullerton, so they could conceivably win those series and conceivably could win the conference. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities, so it's all, and obviously their RPI is still going to be out there because of all these tough teams they play. So, I mean, it's, you know, if they get in as a 3 seed, they're, I mean, I wouldn't be excited to have to be a 2 seed facing Thomas Eshelman, but they're not built to really slug their way through if they were to get into a loser's bracket, they're not going to go far.
That's what I look at, Mike, is this league has 5 teams in the top 60 in RPI, including conference leader UC Irvine, which goes to Florida next weekend. And then you have 2 teams in the 200-plus with Riverside and Hawaii. It feels like those might be RPI killers. This is a very difficult league to read. I could see this being a one-bid league with UC Santa Barbara if they win the regular season.
Yeah.
And I could see this being a two-bid league. I could see it being a three-bid league. But I don't know. It's hard to figure. And it wasn't a great weekend for the league at all with Santa Barbara also. And they win 2 out of 3. But Dylan Tate doesn't start for them on Sunday with this upper neck trap muscle strain. Just, I don't know if you have a take on the Big West, hot or otherwise.
I don't know if I have a hot take. You know, I saw Cal State Fullerton when I was out in California, and I mean, and you look at the numbers too, and it's scary. A team who doesn't hit that well, I guess scary isn't the right word. I guess they're very not scary, that lineup. It's just, I mean, they still, I'll give them credit because they do grind out at bats, they do draw their walks, but they just, when they get men on, it's just, you know, they can't figure it out, they can't bring them across. So, I don't know. I mean, you can only rely on pitching so much, you gotta hit a little bit too. So,
they really don't execute offensively, it seems like, at all. Whether it's bunting, moving runners otherwise, stealing a base when they need to, getting that 2-out hit with the runner at second base.
Yeah.
It was rough to watch on TV. You guys have both seen them in person, but on TV, that's the impression I get with the Titans, is they don't expect to come up big in those situations.
Yeah, they just didn't have an edge this series. I mean, and it was kind of one thing Randall kind of alluded to. They just weren't.
There's not a lot of there
that much. Yeah,
there's not a lot of there offensively, at least. Is there any there with Irvine? I mean, is this team a club that is a real threat? I mean, it's a team that got off to a brutal start, I believe 0-6. Mm-hmm. But certainly we expect a Mike Gillespie coach team to get better. That's always the intro of my Coach Gillespie impersonation. But 0-6 to start the year at Fresno, at Cal. This team seems like it keeps getting a little better and a little better. They haven't played the toughest schedule in the Big West yet. They have played Hawaii already, swept them. They played at Riverside, swept them. Mm-hmm. So they still got to go to Fullerton. They've still got Cal Poly. They still got to go to Santa Barbara and Northridge. So it's going to be a tough finish.
Yeah.
But this is a team that went to Omaha last year. I know they lost a lot of those guys, but call me crazy. I'm not going to bet against Mike Gillespie coach team guys. And I don't know if anything stands out for you guys about the Anteaters. Their season.
Yeah, I think the big thing was their bullpen kind of came together. I think they kind of struggled early. They found an answer in the lineup there. They lose Taylor Sparks, the centerpiece last year, but they get this freshman Keston Hira. Hira.
He was very highly regarded out of.
Yeah, he's South really kind of been the become the centerpiece of that lineup there. And you know, they had some closer issues at the start of the year, but. I'm blanking on the
Sam Moore.
That
Sam
was
Moore, who led the country in saves last year.
Yeah, like the start of the year, he was just had lost all his confidence in his splitter, which was his main pitch last year. He just, you know, I think guys had kind of the book had kind of gotten out on him at the end of last year, and guys kind of started knocking him around. And this year, he just had no confidence in it, and he was kind of searching for answers. But it looks like he's kind of found it. They've gotten some, you know, they don't really have any, huge, stuff guys in their rotation. But they've got some dudes that can pitch, so they've kind of like I said, they've gotten better, which is pretty much what you'd expect.
It is kind of it's what they do, and they throw a lot of strikes as a pitching staff, as usual. It's kind of their MO. It has been for years. And, like you said, I think it's Hira, very well-regarded freshman, came in. I think he led all of the Southland last year in home runs, Southern California high school players. I remember reading an Eric Sonheimer feature about him that he was kind of a late bloomer as a high school player, but the power's there. They've hit for some power. Andrew Martinez has hit for some power for them when he's been healthy this year. So they've been a little physical again this year, which last year Sparks pretty much represented their entire physicality. That's Connor Spencer, obviously, at first base, who was like the 400 hitter and like the real key to their offense in front of Sparks. But they're going to skill it up, even though they don't have great speed. You see the sacrifice bunts and the hit-by pitches. It's par for the Southern California course for Irvine. But this team seems like we'll really find out. We'll find out starting this weekend. They've got the toughest part of their Big West schedule. If push came to shove, Mike, how many teams do you think are going to get in from this league if you're doing your bracketology?
Yeah. I'm still thinking it might just be UC Santa Barbara, honestly, at this point. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Irvine comes in there. I mean, you look at their schedule, and it's definitely – they haven't played a lot of quality teams so far. I mean, they do have, a nice one against San Diego.
They won that series against Tennessee early, which – yeah, at least you get some of that SEC-ness of playing Tennessee. You know?
That's true. And Tennessee looked a little better earlier in the season, too. And then they beat USC early on in the year, which is a nice one as well. But it's really going to come down to this final stretch here. They're playing UCLA this week, midweek, Cal State Fullerton. So, and then they have UC Santa Barbara still on the docket. So, you know, I'm not ruling them out, but I think Santa Barbara is the team to be here. I mean, obviously, it depends in part on Dylan Tate's status, whether or not he's out for an extended period of time. I think they still have enough pitching to get by without him. I mean, they have oodles of arms. They've been deep this year on the mound.
They really have.
They've got Bieber fever with the Shane Bieber. You know, he's been fantastic for them. And, you know,
like Yakimi's kind of come along after a slow start. He's gotten better.
He's getting cross-checked. I can tell you that just starting some draft calls last week. Hakimi's certainly not at the same level as Tate.
Yeah.
But which I don't know what level Tate's at now that he missed a start. I mean, that's just not a good sign that you have 9 career starts. There are only so many chances teams have to look at you. And Dylan Tate has shown number 1 overall pick caliber stuff.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have that track record. And, you know, you have a finite amount of time to build the track record if you're Dylan Tate and losing a start this weekend.
Yeah.
Just can't help. I'm not saying it crushes him or hurts his draft stock per se, but he didn't help. So we have number 2 on our board right now behind Brendan Rodgers. Mm-hmm. I'd still leave him there if we did it today, but not a good sign. It's just not.
And Kyle Funkhauser got knocked around a little bit this weekend too. So
he was not at his best. And Nathan Kirby comes out after 3 scoreless innings in his start.
The lat strain.
So. I'll tell you who was good though was Carson Fulmer. Mm-hmm. Again.
Yeah.
And so let's talk a little SEC. We have these rivalry series already on tap. Well, not rivalry series, these crucial series on tap for next weekend, guys. We have Fullerton at Irvine, we've already talked about, or Irvine at Fullerton, Nebraska at Iowa. The big one next week is going to be LSU and Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Number 1 versus number 2. And guys, the Aggies took their first had their first bad day of the entire year, basically. They go to sleep on Saturday with a 7-3 lead in a game that gets suspended against Arkansas, and they just had a brutal day Sunday. They cough up that lead, lose that game, then lose the 7th inning curfew shortened finale of the series. They lose their first series of the year. Take a pretty good look for the Razorbacks with the freshman Keaton McKinney was outstanding in the finale on Sunday. I thought they pitched pretty well all weekend, the Razorbacks. And then, obviously, the Aggies. So what led to the slip-up, guys? What, in your minds, it seemed like that was just really one day where any mistake their pitchers made got pounded.
Yeah, I think it's more just a bad day, like you're saying. I don't think it's indicative of anything major going on with them. I just think it's one of those days where Arkansas had their number, whether, you know, it came down to just their game plan or whatever it was. I mean, they crushed Matt Kent yesterday in that second game, scoring, you know, 6 runs, you know, with just one
like
out
that.
In the first. Yeah,
like
just,
it was instant.
Yeah. So
a lot of balls got turned around very quickly.
Maybe he was tipping his pitches or, you know, who knows? I mean, but, you know, I just think it was a bad day. And, you know, obviously this weekend coming up against LSU is going to be a big, big test for them. And it really could decide that division, you know, because they're neck and neck with each other right now. And, you know, if one team sweeps or, you know, whoever picks 2 out of 3 of that series, I mean, it's going to, you know, push them over the edge.
Jim, the thing that stands out to me about A&M as I watch them, the second time I think I've seen them on TV, second weekend where I've gotten to watch a couple of their games. And outside of Nick Banks and that pitching staff, there's some not great bodies on them. That's not the most athletic team, especially on the corners. It's just not a. That stood out to me. Arkansas looked like the more athletic team, maybe all around, and maybe I'm underselling the Aggies up the middle.
No, I think you're on them. I mean, when I saw both those teams in Houston, albeit not against each other, but
right.
I mean, LSU was the more athletic team. That's why I came away thinking they were the best team at that time. And A&M was kind of in their midst of their undefeated run. So it was kind of before we knew how good they were. But that was also the weekend that A.J. Minner got hurt. But anyway, so, I mean, yeah, LSU was clearly the more athletic-looking team on A&M. I thought they were more the good college players type of team, the more older guys that have been around that have... You know, guys like Mitchell Gnaw and guys like that have maybe not going to be not be hearing their names called in the first or second day of the draft, if
but
at
Hunter,
all. But
Hunter Melton is that kind of guy.
Yeah, that
Hunter
kind
Melton
of guy.
Is just, and it might
Michael
have just
Barash
been,
had a big hit. Yeah, some of those guys.
It might have been the uniforms. You know, they were the ones maybe that's what didn't flatter them. I don't know. Hunter Melton has a lot of Wes Ray in him. He's not that. I mean, he's not big enough to have that much Wes Ray in him. But he's a big boy. It just wasn't. So it wasn't a great look for them this weekend, just for me. And you really did. That's the real contrast with them and LSU is the athleticism and the aggressiveness I would expect to see out of LSU in that weekend series. That said, I know they didn't look great yesterday, but A&M does the arms shine through when you watch them. And it was fun to watch Nick Hendricks and getting his first start this weekend. That's a live arm. It's a nasty breaking ball when it's on. He's very fun to watch. Obviously, nasty breaking balls. We have to talk about Alex Lang and LSU. I don't know, Mike, it sounds like we're kind of favoring LSU in this matchup, but they got right back on it and pitched very well in a rain-shortened series at Georgia.
Yeah. Well, it was good that they got Alex Lang back because he didn't start the weekend before. And, I mean, he was on a limited pitch count, but once again, he didn't miss a beat. You know, 6 innings, 1 run, 4 strikeouts. I mean, he's a force for them, and you know, it's a young staff for sure, but they haven't pitched like they're freshmen. They haven't pitched like they're young, and you can't really. It's hard to pitch against that offense. You look at the way Texas A&M pitched against Arkansas this weekend, and you wonder how they're going to match up against that LSU offense in the box. I mean, you know, it's got to be worrisome if you're a Texas A&M fan. This is not the time of the season you want to cool off. You want to keep playing well, but. Yeah, I mean, LSU, we've liked them all year. I know, I think you and I both picked them as our preseason national championship winners. So, and they're still, you know, they've been jockeying back and forth between first and second. You know, I don't think they've been out of the top five this year.
Not LSU, not all year.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the thing with them is they got to make sure that they can find a quality third option in that weekend rotation because Jake Godfrey was hit around a lot. And so I know they've made some changes there. They moved Alex Bain there into that spot. They didn't have a Sunday game this weekend because of rain. But
that's the best way to go about it. Just don't play a third game on the weekend.
So, yeah, if they can keep that going, if they could, you know, do some rain dancing and, you know, avoid that Sunday game, it'll probably be fine. But, no, I mean, they have plenty of talented arms to turn to for that role. It's just finding the guy to stick with.
You know what stands out to me about both these teams, guys, is that neither one of them, especially if you look at it on our top 25 tracker, they played a combined 4 games against the top 25.
It does kind of jump out.
Texas A&M, you know, we knocked them a lot early for their week schedule. At least in the league, they've gone to Alabama, they've gone to Kentucky, which are both kind of borderline, regional teams. They won a home series against Missouri before the Tigers were ranked. back when Missouri still had the stench of the Wisconsin-Milwaukee sweep on them. And they played Mississippi State and now Arkansas. So the rest of the schedule, still, you know, still only one ranked team left for them at LSU. Tennessee's toward the bottom of the league. Ole Miss is at 500. South Carolina, we'll talk about them in a minute. Some snatches of life for the Gamecocks this weekend. But Texas A&M hasn't played a great schedule. And then you look at LSU, they haven't played. They played fewer ranked teams all year. I mean, they played a little bit better caliber of team in general. They did win. You know, if you look at common opponents, they did win 2 out of 3 at Arkansas. But LSU really doesn't have. They haven't played a great schedule either, Jim. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like this weekend really is the first big test for both teams. I'm just really hoping that the weather holds up. We get in 3 games.
Exactly.
I feel like we'll know a lot more about both these clubs after this weekend. I feel like Vanderbilt and Florida have both played tougher schedules by a good bit over these two teams. Am I crazy to think that?
I think Vanderbilt has. I think Florida's been. I mean, well, Florida, difference with Florida is they've actually lost a. They've lost a couple series. I mean, they lost that series to Ole Miss, and then they lost to Missouri. But they've kind of gotten
midweek
some
games too.
Yeah, that was the other. Yeah, that's probably the other big difference. They do lose 2 out of 3 to Florida State. It ends up that way. But anyway, yeah. I mean, LSU, they haven't. Look at the. I mean, they did beat Nebraska and Houston in the in that tournament there, and they they swept Kansas at the start of the year. So I mean, that's not great. They probably their best weekend if you just look at it. I mean, is probably. Beating Arkansas. I mean, yeah, 2 out of 3.
Right.
And that was a month ago. I mean, that probably is the best thing they've really done. Maybe the Houston College Classic, I'm going 3-0 there. That was a good showing. But, I mean, yeah, this is definitely really the biggest test for both teams. I mean, LSU does still have a home series with Missouri left, and they finish the year at South Carolina, which maybe that ends up being a good test if the Gamecocks keep it going. But, yeah, I mean, this is really the chance for both teams to prove that they are the best in the SEC.
I think we've figured out that South Carolina has some grit. They found some toughness this weekend. You get just destroyed and handled like they did last week by Florida. You lose your ace in Will Crow to Tommy John surgery. And they just get shut down on Thursday night. Another one of these SEC games, by the way, where to me the optics for the league stink on Thursdays. And I don't blame their fans. It's Thursday. It's not a weekend. It's not the same kind of schedule where you can pack it in a little early for the weekend from work and go tailgate for a night game and get ready for a Friday night game and plan a little bit ahead for it. Thursday night's a little bit tougher. And just some of those Thursday night games that wind up one-sided, you look at the end of those games on Thursday nights and it's just empty in those ballparks. And I feel bad for the schools because you know how much all these schools really care about college baseball attendance. And some of those Thursday night games just look terrible on TV. But I guess those are some of the positives for South Carolina is that they really showed some grit. Jack Weinkoop was huge.
That was a big deal for me.
Kind of a heroic CG for him, and the team comes back and wins the whole series or series in the case of South Carolina. But I do want to talk about the Commodores. Back-to-back series losses now, guys, for Vanderbilt. They're getting a little weighed down by the rest of their rotation. After Carson Fulmer, he's been dynamite on back-to-back Thursday nights on national TV. I still have talked to the scouting director and talked to two guys who saw him the last 2 weekends who were decision makers, and they both still, oh, yeah, he was great. I still think he's a reliever, So I think if his delivery had a little less effort in it, a little less energy, however you want to put it, that he would be the top college pitcher drafted in this draft. That's how sketchy this draft class is for me. And he has the best combination of stuff, track record, consistency, Tim Tebow-like makeup. Threw him into the podcast, but he was...
I thought you said this was going to be a Tebow-free zone, John.
I said it off the air, but on the air, I forgot that I had my comp from an area scout coming out of high school for Carson Fulmer, who called him a potential Tim Tebow of college baseball because the makeup and the leadership. Yeah. You have to be a special makeup to wear those uniforms and pull it off.
Yeah,
he's got the athleticism to pull it off. Now I sound like Clint Longenecker. He's got the body to pull it off. But he's just been dynamite, and yet... The Commodores have lost 2 straight series. What do you guys see in this team? Is there just something a little bit off? Or it feels like part of it is they get everybody's best shot. And at a certain point, as good as they are, they do still, second half of their lineup especially, is pretty young. And their bullpen's pretty young. I think at times, it's a little bit tough for them. It's wearing them down in some ways, and they always get everybody else's best shot.
Yeah, you do kind of. Obviously, they have pretty much an unlimited number of arms, it feels like, even though they...
Right.
You know, obviously, Buehler kind of struggled this weekend, it looked like. But anyway, I mean...
Touch 97, yeah. According to R. Hudson, Belinsky, but still the stuff wasn't...
Yeah.
It was, the command wasn't crisp.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of wonder about whether they'll be able to... If they have to get into some slugfest, whether they'll be able to score enough. I think that's kind of the question.
That's what it seems like to me. And in the league,
in the last 2 weeks, I mean, their offense has gone away. I mean, in the games they've lost. I mean, they lose that 16-inning game to Ole Miss where they get shut down by Scott Weathersby out of the Rebel bullpen, and then they only get two runs in each of the last two games against the Gamecocks. So, I mean, that's kind of been... And they lose 3-2 to Belmont, and, you know, throw that in there, too. I mean, that's... And 3-1... Before that, they lose 3-1 to Lipscomb, so...
It's odd because they still lead the SEC in runs scored in league play. They lead the league in ERA and in strikeouts as a pitching staff. Mm-hmm. But so I don't have the red flags yet, but I'm sure Tim Corbin is wondering kind of which, you know, what is his team? I mean, obviously he knows the field is a little bit better, but you know, it just feels like Vanderbilt's not quite hitting on all cylinders. And I don't know, I'd be a little bit concerned. I don't know how concerned you are, Mike, but I'm a little concerned for them just because they feel like they're hitting a little low. This is the better time to do it, though, in April than in May or June.
Yeah, I mean, I do have some concern, obviously. You want to see the wins. I mean, I think you talk about the numbers there. I mean, that points to a turnaround for them if they continue to, you know, lead in ERA and run scored. I mean, you would think that would, you know, result in more wins and would correct itself. I mean, Walker Buehler has struggled a little bit of late. You know, he's not as sharp. Even though the velocity is there and the stuff is there, he just hasn't been as sharp. And you wonder how much of that is maybe health related, or you know, it might not be. You know, I don't want to speculate on that, but
yeah, he's kind of getting. It's almost like he's getting into midseason form in some ways, and a little bit later than everybody else.
Because he missed the first couple weeks of the year. So, you know, and then that third starter, they've gone back and forth between Sheffield and Kilichowski, trying to find a consistent arm there. You know, it looks like Kilichowski pitched decently well this weekend. You know, I wonder who they'll go with going forward there. But and then, you know, losing Hayden Stone is a loss in that pen. They really just have a couple of guys that they're relying on in that bullpen.
It's been a tough year for your 2013 Tennessee high school pitching class.
Yeah.
With Will Crow and Hayden Stone, both this year going down with Tommy John surgery. You had Dakota Hudson, who's kind of like at Mississippi State. He's just kind of been he hasn't really stepped forward in that into a more prominent role. I mean, he's got nasty stuff. And then Kyle Serrano with the struggling Serranos of Tennessee with an ERA close to 6. So it has not been 2015 has not been a good year for what was a very talented high school pitching class. They also included Sheffield. Okay. I forget which Sheffield brother is at Vanderbilt right now. Is it Jordan or Justice?
That's Jordan. Jordan. Justin's Jordan. Justice is the Indians.
Yes, who had some had his own rough spring. Yeah. But yeah, it just hasn't been a great year for those guys. For any of those high school pitchers, and it feels like some of those roles are still coming together for Vanderbilt. They do have the luxury of plenty of guys to audition for these roles, and they also have the luxury of time. Gamecocks guys, we talked about their victory a little bit. So next weekend, it's Missouri at Vanderbilt in the big series. And then I guess another SEC issue of note is Florida. The Gators moved up in our rankings to number 6. So Florida, Vanderbilt, and Missouri all tied at 12-6 in the SEC East. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on. Seems like Florida, they just have continued to develop offensively while they're figuring out their pitching, Jim, behind Logan Shore.
Exactly. I mean, go on the road and win a 2-1 game at Mississippi State, which that's a struggling team, but I mean that's still a tough place to go and win. I mean now. You know, the Gators have kind of got their momentum back. I mean, if you can take out those midweek losses to Florida State, but obviously they're 8-2 in weekend series now. They still have that weekend series, a win over Miami from early in the year. That's kind of a thing they can hang their hat on. And I mean, obviously they're when you look at this race for like national seeds and hosts and whatnot out of the SEC. I mean, Vanderbilt's RPI is down into the 20s now, which is kind of surprising.
But, it is. It's weird. I thought they played a better schedule.
Yeah, I really think so. But, I mean, Mizzou is still kind of... I think Mizzou was number 40, so...
Yep.
You know, whoever loses that series is... Vandy, they're probably on the outside looking... Might be on the outside looking in for a national seed at this point. And Mizzou, if they can win that series this weekend, they would probably... Since they have a series win over Florida, maybe they could probably get into that hosting race. That's something you need to win out in terms of series. But
it's weird. I mean, it's weird in the SEC, Jim. You have these three teams in the top 10 in RPI, but then you have these five teams that have separated themselves: A&M and LSU in the West, Florida, Vanderbilt, Missouri in the East. All five of those teams have 12 league wins. No one else in the league over 500 in league play. Feels like Arkansas is like the next team, and we rank the Razorbacks this week at number 25. They've played a tough schedule. Ole Miss is this gaudy RPI, but they're right at 500 overall. Really just got pounded in the last game of the Auburn series. Feels like Auburn, Alabama, South Carolina, Ole Miss, all these teams are... You can see all these teams being in regionals. Kentucky, mm-hmm. You can see the SEC with like 11 or 12 teams, or you can see it with like 7 or 8.
Exactly. I mean, Kentucky's got that road series win at LSU.
And that doesn't hurt.
They're up there in the RPI. I mean, they're 42 in the RPI. So, I mean, it's really the only teams that are out of it. I mean, Tennessee's down there. Georgia's kind of fallen off there down there. Mississippi State. Other than everyone else is still, 11 out of the 14 are pretty still, you can still see them. There's a path for them to get into the postseason.
I still think Ole Miss is one of the more head-scratching teams in the country, though.
I agree.
You can't really put a finger on what they're doing. I mean, they win that big series against Vanderbilt, and you think, okay, here they go. Here they come.
Right.
And then they drop another series this weekend. So it's, I'm not really sure what's going on with them.
I think of college baseball states, and like South Carolina and Mississippi are two of the most passionate states for college baseball.
Yeah.
With some of the most successful programs in recent memory. Just in the state of Mississippi, you've had three different teams go to Omaha in the last 6 years, with Southern Miss in 2009, Mississippi State in 2013, Ole Miss last year. And this year it's conceivable that none of those teams go to even the regionals,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy. And the Palmetto State, I guess the best team this year is what, College Charleston?
It would have to be, yeah.
We've got Charleston at the top of that. We do have, I think, a very unique opportunity. I'm seeing if... I'll find somebody to go to this. The city of Charleston has two college conference tournaments. The SoCon will be at Citadel at Joseph P. Riley Park.
Mm-hmm.
And then College of Charleston will host the CAA tournament. So both going on at the same time at opposite ends of the peninsula is there. And Charleston, one at Patriots Point, one at Joseph P. Riley Park. That's kind of unique, but I guess the Gamecocks are back on track. And I guess even Clemson, we should wrap up and talk a little ACC, guys. The Atlantic Coast Conference, even Clemson won a series this weekend, but that league is even more, I don't know, FUBAR than the SEC? I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah.
Not impressed, really, with any teams outside Louisville, Florida State, Miami, to a lesser extent North Carolina, which is still in our rankings, but boy, Georgia Tech's a team we had ranked, and they flopped this weekend. They get swept by BC.
That's a face plant right there.
Yeah.
That was a face plant. And I guess the other team, I guess, coming up on the outside, Virginia.
Yeah.
Cavaliers win kind of a must-win series. Still 9-12, but they did. They had to beat Miami at least once this weekend. They didn't just beat them; they won the series. I don't know, does that resurrect UVA's regional chances? Their schedule ahead is not easy, guys.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, they're still playing NC State in Raleigh, and they're playing UNC in Chapel Hill, which won't be easy either series. And they're playing Duke too. And
they basically finished with all the triangle teams.
Yeah, they're finishing in the triangle, and
there could be worse places to go from our standpoint and from theirs.
Yeah,
because none of those teams really blows me away.
Right. Yeah. So, from that standpoint, they definitely have a chance. I think they won two out of three in their toughest remaining series, I would say. But obviously losing Nathan Kirby, if that's a significant stretch
right.
of time, a lat strain, if he misses a couple starts, if he misses the rest of the year, I mean, who knows how much time he'll miss, that could certainly hurt them because they weren't pitching that well anyway, which was surprising because we thought coming in that pitching would be their strength.
Right.
So, but now they have Joe McCarthy back, which seemed to give them a shot in the arm this week, almost immediately. And then they have a freshman that they really like, Gerstenmaier, starting at second base now, which was an area of weakness for them. They had Justin Novak hitting there, another freshman, and he was batting below 100. So, he wasn't really an offensive factor at all. So they do have some pieces that are coming together. And then as soon as they do, they have another piece that's
right.
missing now with Nathan Kirby out with his strain. So I do still like Virginia's talent, but they're kind of on the outside. They're right on the bubble right now. I think they're tied with Wake right now,
right
at the edge of the ACC tournament picture.
Even just getting into the ACC tournament,
I
mentioned regional, though, that's where they are. And,
and
I'll tell you, Jim, the other team, we mentioned Georgia Tech and their face plant. Georgia Tech's still really high in the RPI. What are they, 17?
Yeah, 17, I think they were in the teens RPI, coming into the weekend.
Boston College's RPI is pretty decent. It's 50.
I will say Boston College does have a few nice arms.
You liked your look at BC against the Deacs.
Yeah, I got a good look at them against the Deacs, and Jesse Adams threw 6 2/3 perfect innings against BC yesterday, and I really like him. He's a three-pitch guy. He commands his curveball well. He has a changeup. He throws to righties. You know, he has good stuff. He pitched really well against a dominant, you know, a very powerful Wake Forest team out of the pen. And
right.
They have another guy, Justin Dunn, a sophomore. He's drafted out of high school. He touches 94. He's been a closer for them. He's a three-pitch guy, too.
I remember that name.
And then, you know, Mike King, their Friday guy, he's, you know, he's no slouch. He pitches well. He pitched excellent against Georgia Tech this weekend. I mean, combined, they just allowed one run, which
that's
is
amazing.
Yeah, which is...
With Kel Johnson back,
too. Yeah.
Which TFCO.
Is, so, I don't think... You know, I mean, they need to get Chris Shaw back healthy after, you know, breaking the bone in his hand. But, you know, I think BC has some pieces. I think they could sneak up on you.
It's really just remarkable to me that Georgia Tech, I felt like that was a series that you, I mean, it's a road series in the league, so you don't go in expecting to win that. But to get swept and to score one run, to get outscored 11-1,
yeah,
that could be a, you know, in the words of Seinfeld, a death blow. I believe that was one of the many fake movies in Seinfeld. That's a death blow kind of series, Jim.
Oh, man, we're missing the death blow.
Exactly. And that could have been a death blow for North Carolina this weekend. They pull one out kind of out of their... To split against Virginia Tech. You know, Notre Dame wins a series against NC State. It just sounds like Notre Dame is a... They lead the league in fielding percentage. So they throw a lot of strikes. They've got solid arms that don't blow you away pitching-wise. They don't have, like, that one standout draft guy like Connaughton last year. But they do throw a lot of strikes, and they catch it. And, Jim, it took NC State 14 innings to win any games in that series. Feels like Notre Dame is more and more shaping up as one of these potential at-large teams, and I didn't see that coming. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Yeah, I definitely think they're... When they're sitting there at 3-9 after getting swept at home by the Cavs and Louisville... two weekends in a row, you kind of think, all right, they had a nice start, but now they kind of hit reality. But, I mean, they fight back. They sweep that huge series against Florida State. Now they take care of this one. I mean, they're definitely on track to get in. I have to look at what their schedule is. But, I mean, they've already played Louisville and Florida State, so it can't...
Right.
They've already played most of the good teams, so in Virginia, too. I mean, so... I would expect them to be there, to be in the postseason.
I mean, you had them, I think, as a 3 seed last time, and that's where I talked you out of having them as a 2 seed. I would not be successful in talking you out of having them as a 2 seed this week.
I finished 4th in the league, so yeah, like someone's got to be.
Someone's got to be. And
I felt like there were about 40 teams that felt like 3 seeds last week, so someone has to be a 2.
It's kind of that kind of tournament this year, and I guess...
I feel like it's going to be a very chalky regional weekend shaping up to be.
But there's some definition between the top teams. I mean, look at the top of the Pac-12 is like these other leagues. The top teams have kind of separated themselves and kind of run and hit a little bit in the Pac-12. I mean, that really seems like that's UCLA, then Arizona State, and the Trojans. Those three teams are kind of as far away from the rest of the league as those top SEC and ACC teams are. It feels like, and it just feels like UCLA guys. They had the one bad weekend.
Yeah.
And other than that,
I saw them at the worst. I jinxed them. I've jinxed a few guys.
So in non-Lanana weekends.
On a non-Lanana weekends, they're amazing.
They're undefeated, it feels like. And I mean, and Cal, I guess, was the other team that I was on the Cal train earlier.
Yeah.
Really, some of the Dalton Jeffries injury and him missing a couple weeks really threw them off track. They don't have great depth, which has kind of been the story of Cal's program the last 5 years. Feels like an opportunity squandered, really, for Cal as far as maybe being a regional team this year.
Yeah.
Anything else stand out to you guys about the Pac-12 this weekend, besides the fact that UCLA just seems unassailable?
I mean, I think Oregon State kind of got back on track. They had that series loss to the Ducks, but I think they beat Arizona they beat this week.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, I think they're probably still, you know, at least in contention for regionals. I mean, obviously Cal is... falling down a bit, and you got those three teams. You kind of got three teams fighting for national seeds with the Bruins, the Sun Devils, and the Trojans. I mean, the Trojans probably the one on the outside looking in right now, given that they lost head to head. But after those three, it's and then you kind of throw in the Beavers maybe as number 4. But it's not. I feel like there's a lot to get excited about right now.
That's how that league feels to me, is that it's really been this kind of this three-team race, and there hasn't been a consistent fourth team yet in the Pac-12. I do think it's likely Oregon State at this point. They've been the most consistent. I mean, it was not a good look for them to lose to when Oregon had just been losing to everybody on the planet, and then all of a sudden Oregon State loses to them. But, you know, the talent, we've talked about how young the Oregon State talent is, but it seems like they're one of the more talented teams in the league if they can get things together. I still kind of like Cal, but...
I like Cal, too.
It just doesn't seem like they've found... They've just kind of lost the mojo here. What, have they lost 7 out of their last 10 games?
Yeah, I mean, Lucas Erceg for a while was carrying them, and he's cooled off just a tad.
Yep.
You know, I do like, they do have some interesting pieces on that team. They do have some freshmen that have stepped up in that weekend rotation without Dalton Jeffries there. But, yeah, I mean, obviously their last couple of weeks haven't been good, so they need to get back on the winning track if they want to have a chance at it. You know, and I thought Oregon, too, this weekend, you know, they crushed Kyle Toomey.
Right.
Which I thought, oh, hey, you know, maybe they're making some moves here. And then, of course, they lost the rubber game the next day, so... You know, there goes that, but, you know.
none of these other Pac-12 teams has been consistent, and that's been really the issue, is that Oregon had the great start. I guess they have been consistent. Oregon's consistently been not very good in league play. That's the consistency they've shown.
Yeah.
But it really does feel like there's some top heaviness, which I think I'm with you, Jimmer. I think it could be chalky in the league that's the most, I'll say it again, the league that's the most interesting league. It's the Big Ten. It's the most interesting league that has the most teams where you could see an Ohio State or a Michigan or a Michigan State or Nebraska.
Those are the teams, you know, if we talk about...
Those would be dangerous. I was just thinking,
I think it was last year, we had 7 road teams win regionals, if I remember right. And I was thinking, there's probably... We're not going to come close to that this year, but maybe those Big Ten teams are actually the ones that could, because they're used to playing on the road. They're not going to be thrown off. And like I said, we've been saying they're all Ohio State... Nebraska, all those seems to be dangerous when you're there at 2 or 3.
I wouldn't want to face them. I would not want to face some of those teams, especially in Illinois, but they're not going to be on the road.
They're probably not.
They're going to be home. And it's been fun to watch that develop as the year's gone on. We'll go ahead and wrap up the podcast. Nice work, gentlemen. We'll be around this weekend, but we're still seeing if we can send Mike to Nashville or, I don't know, maybe even Baton Rouge. I've never been to Baton Rouge.
I've never been either. I'd love to go, but
I've only seen LSU at the Superdome or in Omaha. I've never seen them actually in their natural habitat, which is kind of ridiculous when you think about how long I've been here. I've never seen the Bayou Bengals. I've never seen the Intimidator billboard in person. I'm kind of ashamed to admit that actually. But we'll have plenty of more college baseball, and of course you can check us out on video. BA Today, a little college part of the BA Today video today at BaseballAmerica.com. And plenty more coming up this week. And it's all sponsored, I should say, by Louisville Slugger. Check them out on Instagram and on Twitter at Slugger Nation. So for Jim and for Mike, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time, everybody.
The guy's still up there.
But it's still very good. But
they're down to 6-6 now. They kind of need to pick it up a little bit.
That's what I'm wondering. I think we talked about how strong the Big Ten is this year, and it's been borne out. But when you have